Hi everyone. So here we have Brian Carrera on the Latina Lifestyle Legacy podcast, and it is such an honor to have you and to learn all about credit, whether that's like building credit, starting credit, using credit, right? And all of those things. So thank you for joining the podcast.
Thank you, Reina. Thank you for having me. You know, it's a pleasure to be on your show, your podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And we're going to get into it. And just to kind of like, you know, warm up and everything, I do have two icebreaker questions.
Awesome.
So the first one is, what is the best book you've ever read?
Oof. Okay. So definitely I'm going to have to give it to Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Mm-hmm. Hopefully everyone has read it by now. Mm-hmm. If you haven't, like, you really just stop what you're doing and read that book.
Stop after you listen to your podcast.
So Rich Dad, Poor Dad, because I mean, it's just the gateway into entrepreneurship, into the world of finance, you know, taking control. And it's a really empowering book to believe in yourself, that you are capable more of the traditional system. And it's a really great book, mm-hmm. a really great story.
Mm-hmm. I would say even reading it like two or three times or like once a year, because we're so programmed in the society to think a certain way. And especially just if it's your first time, like you're just going to think, it's going to make you think just so differently. And compared to what we've been programmed to, like go to school, get a job. And so it's a very, very great book. But once you understand it, you're everything changes, like your whole mindset. So yeah, highly recommend hit that book. And then all of the Robert Kiyosaki books that he writes. That's a great mm-hmm. book. Okay. And then the second one is, what's your favorite item that you've bought in this year? Or that you've bought this year?
For 2021 or 2022?
Mm-hmm. Oh, right? Yeah.
We're already 10 days in the new year.
I know. We'll say 2021.
Okay. 2021, definitely. Me and my wife took a risk, and we got pitched a timeshare condo in Las Vegas. And it's something that most people would steer away from, right? You hear timeshare.
Yeah.
And you automatically say no. Mm-hmm. But thankfully we said yes, because we tend to look at things from different points of view. How can mm-hmm. we utilize this to get the best value out of it? Mm-hmm. And actually, now that we own it, that's a good thing. This timeshare, we actually own it. Mm-hmm. We have a deed to the property. If you compare it to something like the Disney Vacation Club, where mm-hmm. those are timeshares too, those are leased to you in 20 to 30 year increments, mm-hmm. and then Disney takes it back.
Oh, wow.
So in this scenario, we got the property here in Las Vegas, mm-hmm. Where we're actually now enjoying it right away, right?
Yeah, I love that. And if you don't mind me asking, how old are you and your wife?
Yes.
Because you guys are super young, but
yeah, we're both 24.
Oh my goodness. So y'all are just like making moves. And I just love how you're both, you and her, are very open-minded. And I think especially at 24, like you, like people aren't even thinking like that, right? Or they're, I don't know, where did you got it in Vegas?
Yes, this property is in Vegas. We fell for it because they pitched us like, so their marketing, strategy is to pay people to show up to a tour.
Yes.
They walk you around and then they make you uncomfortable to say no and leave. And they use kind of a lot of guilt tactics. Yeah. And especially because they're paying you, it's weird, weird psychology. A lot of people do buy, but a lot of people do start regretting it after. So there's a lot of horror stories out there of people who, that's why if you hear anyone with the timeshare, there's a lot of negative connotation towards it, mm-hmm. because most people get sucked into like kind of pressure buying.
Mm. But you guys see it differently.
Yeah. I kept saying no, no, no. And then I asked one important question that switched the whole perspective around. And I said, okay, if I'm going to own it, but I can't, you know, it's a timeshare, I can't, can I live in it? And they said, yes and no. So the answer to the no part is because I only own it for a week.
Oh, yes.
It's a timeshare. Yes, because I can pay to buy other people's slots. Well, okay. The beautiful thing is we get it at like ridiculously low prices.
Yeah, no. And I kind of, we were just talking about this before we were recording, because my parents also invested in like a timeshare, and my parents are, you know, like super smart people too. And like they're also not easily convinced, or, you know, they don't just like give their money to anyone. And so for them to get it, like they understood the concept, and also it's using it. And you basically also go on, you know, a week, you stay in those locations, but it's very like exclusive. Basically, if you wanted to just go and like stay there, it would be a lot more money than what you actually pay for. And then it's all over the world, right? So I just actually went to Mazatlan and we stayed at one of the timeshares, and it's like a beautiful resort, the private beach. Like, I just love the exclusivity about it. So, all right, y'all, but we ain't selling you timeshares.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. No, but that's a great investment. But if people do want to get involved, like, you can reach out to Brian, and I don't know, like, refer it, make
it's just how you use it, right? Yeah. It's like, let's just give also a more traditional example, mm-hmm. just before we end off, so people are like, what's going on?
Yeah,
it's like real estate, right? It can mm-hmm. go really well for you or really wrong for you. Mm-hmm. Even though it's real estate, it's an investment. If mm-hmm. you don't know how to take advantage of an opportunity in that field, it doesn't matter, you know. It all comes yeah. down to how you can creatively get a positive return.
Yeah, so many, just getting creative. And I'm glad you and your family, you know, y'all are taking advantage of it. So awesome. So it's paying off. So Brian, I want you to kind of share a little bit about yourself, like where you grew up, a little bit about your family and things like that, just so we can kind of get a little bit of background on who you are.
Definitely. So yes, my name is Brian Carrera, and I'm actually a dreamer. So I am a DACA recipient. Mm-hmm. I was born in Veracruz, Mexico, and my parents brought me here to the US when I was 3 years old. So I'm very thankful for that, obviously. Mm-hmm. Being a dreamer, you know, I'm very thankful that I never had any problems. Mm-hmm. Because when I turned 18, thanks to Obama and the Dream Act, I was able to, you know, get temporary mm-hmm. residence, and that's where I'm at right now, which I'm totally fine with, you know, as long as I put in my effort. I'm happy to comply, and hopefully one day we have a path, right?
Yeah.
So that's my current situation. I am 24 years old. I'm happily married with my high school sweetheart, Abigail.
Mm-hmm.
So we got married at 18. So
damn.
Yeah, it was like high school, and then, yeah, sure, let's get married.
I mean, you know.
it was our destiny, and like I said, yeah. happily married right now. So everything's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And we are blessed to from God to have a beautiful 1-year-old son right now. And mm-hmm. his name is Elias Gael.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that name, Elias. So,
it's so Elias. His middle name is Gael. Okay. So only because if we do have another boy, the name is going to be Gael. But in case we don't, you know,
oh.
we might as well give it to the first one already, but as a middle name. So
that's funny. Oh, wow. Okay. So thank you so much for sharing about, you know, being open about like being a dreamer. I know I've had a couple guests in the previous episodes that have also shared that. And it's such a, I just think it's like, it reminds me of how privileged I am in that I was born here and just like being grateful of the opportunities, and just to remember to, like, if you do have, you know, if you are a citizen here, like, really take advantage, because it's whether you say it's like it hasn't been a problem, like, there's still just obstacles that are not Indeed. The same, and definitely like a different mindset compared to people who are not dreamers, you know. So but thank you for sharing that. And then, but you're gonna share on how you're not letting that stop you in anything, so that's really powerful. So what inspired you? I want to know, now that we're gonna get into like what you do, what inspired you to get into like the credit business and building credit? Why are you so passionate about that?
Yes. When I was 18, I just kind of, you know, like, we all kind of know credit. We all kind of understand that credit is important.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of something like everybody knows.
Or maybe sometimes people don't know, right? Like, it's like, oh, we just know it's like money borrowed or free, like free, oh, quote unquote, free money. But yeah.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Well, more like, right, you're going to get an auto loan. They ruin your credit. Mm-hmm. So maybe everybody's heard the word credit. But yeah. Like you said, what they might not know is like how it works, mm-hmm. what's it used for, why does it exist? So everything really started for me when I was young. Mm-hmm. Maybe like a little kid, I would see my dad, you know, go to the furniture store, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden we had furniture. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how did that work? And that's how he kind of explained to me at that age. I was maybe like 10 years old. Mm-hmm. So we go here, they let me take the stuff, but I owe them money. Mm-hmm. That's credit. Mm-hmm. It's the furnish company store is a creditor. And I'm being able to borrow, money to take the furniture home.
Yeah.
Today, one of the biggest impacts where I saw it like super beneficial, mm-hmm. was that I believe for like my 11th or 12th birthday, he gifted me a Windows PC, a Windows 95, that old operating system. And you know, this is now like 12 years ago, mm-hmm. so. A PC back then is like, even today, now they're expensive, but yeah. back then they were expensive. Mm. So I was really thankful that he mm-hmm. gave me a PC. And for him, it was like, I want my son to, you know, do good and learn how to use a computer, because he mm-hmm. saw that was the next technological wave, which it was, mm-hmm. but definitely understood that principle that I cannot buy this because I don't have the money. Mm-hmm. But again, he did the same cycle. You know, he borrowed the funds. They lend him the money. He took home the computer, gifted it to me, and then he was making payments. But it just shows you the possibility of being able to acquire things that can, you know, drastically change your future. Mm-hmm. Because with that computer, I learned how to use the internet. I learned, you know, how to do homework on a computer. Essentially, as you can see, credit isn't really about like credit itself. It's about the possibilities that you can actually now obtain and achieve and do.
So I love that. That's like a quote right there. I just think, for the listeners, like, you can hear in Brian's tone is like, you're very comfortable with credit. You have a very positive outlook on it, but some people have a very, and I know we're going to talk about like good debt and bad mm-hmm. debt and the good ways to use credit and then the bad ways. And so I'm just like really like, and you're giving examples on like, for example, the computer, like if you did use it to, you know, with the credit card, but you know, that computer is going to give you the opportunity to like work from home and make all this money online and eventually pay it off. It's an asset, right? Versus a liability. So
correct. And mm-hmm. I do also want to add that one super important factor that I really thank my dad and for mm-hmm. this is that he told me I will never be able to afford it if I save up or anything, and I will never have it unless I push myself to make the payments to obtain it. So he willingly always, you know, signed his personal guarantee every time, because that's what it is. Every time you sign for a loan, it's a personal guarantee that you're going to pay it back. That now he can take that computer. Another big example is he wants like a brand new car. Most people are okay taking like an older car or saving cash, $5,000 for an old car. But to him, it's a pride to have a brand new car. And he said the same thing. I will never have a new car if I don't push myself to take on the loan.
Yeah. Like sometimes you just got to do it. And everyone, of course, and I do want to keep in mind, like everyone has their own, like money is very personal and how people like use it. But this is, I wanted to interview you because this is a different way to use money and strategically and use credit, right? So that's a good way to look at it. I like that.
Correct. And that is ultimately my goal of why I'm passionate about credit is because, like you said, I want to educate people on the format that it's a very powerful tool that can, you know, change your lifestyle, change your life if you start using it correctly. You just have to let go of that taboo or, you know, incorrect influences that you've heard before and try it out. And you can always try it out on a super small scale. To test it.
And building, I've also heard building credit, it's like kind of like a report card or like your history or like your loyalty or a report card on like how well you pay people back, how well you manage your money. So I feel like personally get a credit, like learn how to manage your money first. And then because it's important to, of course, pay back. It's a guarantee, like you got to pay back. But versus like feeling like you're drowning, right? And in debt and in bad debt. So it just depends, right? And what are some credit myths that we can go over for the listeners?
Yes, definitely. So people believe credit is all about your FICO score, right? Mm-hmm. They associate credit to credit score. Well, even though it's kind of true, it's, first of all, it doesn't even make sense. So I'm going to explain that. And what it means is your credit score is like what you were talking about, associated to a credit report, which is exactly what you were saying. It's like a report card of the history and how good you are at paying back loans. And that in turn, you know, it's always going to follow you. So your credit is always going to follow you, just like how you have a like a social security number. It follows you. That's who you are. Your credit report is the same thing. Credit in of itself is the ability to continuously borrow. Credit score is just how worthy you are to borrow.
Okay.
On a scale of 300 to 850.
Okay. So repeat that again. The credit score is the worthiness.
Credit score it's formatted. So to try to specifically pinpoint where you could be to lenders, the problem with it is that it's generated from computers, right?
Okay.
So your credit report generates a credit score, and then that is ultimately kind of what lenders look at, and then they gauge how much they can let you borrow, what terms, interest rates. That's the credit score. But credit over just credit itself is the ability to borrow money.
Yes Okay. And what is another type of myth as well for a credit myth?
Yes. People think credit is difficult to obtain. So what I mean by that is people who aren't actively, you know, trying to increase their credit limits or increase their credit score. When they that's when it is difficult. When you need it the most, you don't have it. And that's very unfortunate.
Yeah, I honestly feel like having, once you have good credit, like you can literally, they'll let you have anything because yes, you're just qualify for much more. And again, it's kind of like that history of how well you manage your money, how well, and if you think about it, it's kind of like in a simpler way, let's say, you know, we've all, or I don't know, maybe you let somebody borrow money, a family member, a friend, and you know, they're like, yeah, I'm going to pay you back. I'll pay you back like next week. And, you know, next week happens, you see them and it's like, they don't pay you back. And you're kind of like, friendly reminder, paying you back. And basically what's going to happen when you don't pay them back? Like, then they're going to ask for money again. And you're going to be like, no, you're not going to let them. And that's literally how banks are. It's like a relationship, or lenders, not just banks, but just overall lenders. Like, it's a relationship that you're building. And sometimes you do need to take out, you do need to have credit or use that credit to build that relationship. Mm-hmm. Kind of, right. So, yeah, I took like a mini class on it. So that's why I kind of like, and the way they explained it, like helped me understand, like, okay, it's just how to use it, right? It's like a, and another big thing that I want to include, because a lot of people who are really good with, like, have an amazing credit score, they don't want to use credit, right? Oh. Like, they're like, okay, I already, like, my credit score is 850. Like, oh, I don't want to buy this because it's going to go down to like 820. Like, oh, right. And then it's like, but it's not, they said, it's not a trophy. It's a tool.
Yes, yes. And that is my biggest pet peeve, actually. Mm-hmm. Like what you just said, where people, mm-hmm. you know, they care so much about a score that they don't actually use it.
And I'm like, okay, well, why even have the credit? Okay. I mean, that's good. And yeah, it's going to go down, but it's not, but you're going to build it back up, right? And it's a tool. It's not a trophy that you hold up. It's a tool, right? So I just want people to note that as well.
Yes.
any other myths?
Yes, yes. I think this is going to be a big one. People think that rich people are rich because they are debt-free. But okay, actually, they are wrong with that. Mm-hmm. They are rich because they are in debt.
Mm.
Because rich people actually use credit. They actually use mm-hmm. other people's money to invest heavily, mm-hmm. not just in their businesses, in the, you know, leveling up their skills themselves. You know, something alongside that is in the S&P 500. That's the 500 biggest companies in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are all in debt. They have in one of their P&L statements, they have debts and they have millions of dollars in debts because of the same thing. They're reinvesting heavily. They take out loans. They don't use their own cash.
Mm-hmm.
They use other people's cash to continue mm-hmm. to invest or grow their company.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they're rich.
Yes.
And people think, no, they're rich because they don't have any debt. They have so much money mm-hmm. that they're debt free. Well, you'd be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually very heavily in debt, but mm-hmm. that's because it's leverage for them to build up their wealth.
Yeah. And it depends also what they're using it for, like for assets, right? Like investment properties.
Correct.
And this is why it's so important. And I'm glad you mentioned the book, like Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Like, you need to read the book because it really explains assets versus liabilities and like all of using, you know, other people's money and changing that mentality that like that debt is like the worst thing, right? And that means like having zero debt means you're rich. I mean, that's great having zero bad debt, but just kind of determining what you're using it for, right?
Yes. Unfortunately, this system that we're in mm-hmm. is designed on debt. So if you mm-hmm. don't play along, you're going to be left behind.
Yeah. But you need to like know the game and be smart. Yeah.
Correct.
I love that. And that's what you're here for. Like educating, especially like the Latino community. Cause you know, it's, I think it's like so fearful, right? Like of using your credit. And I don't know, I think it's just like a balance. Like, of course, like being smart and, you know, having good credit and everything, which requires you to be smart with your money and paying everything, but also like taking risks.
Exactly. That's a big one. Mm-hmm. Pushing yourself to take a small risk. That's how mm-hmm. you start.
I love that.
The last myth about the 10, 20, 30% utilization ratio.
Okay.
So the common knowledge is to never use your card more than the 10, 20, or 30% utilization ratio. Everybody who wants to, you know, show that they're an expert will stick to a number, either the 20, the 30. The myth can be debunked that it's always the closest to zero,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's the myth, but that's boring. What you should really think about is you should only carry a balance on your credit card if it's because you purchased something that's an asset.
Mm.
So in this case, if you're buying a laptop and you're buying it on your credit card, right? And the mm-hmm. laptop is for work purposes and it's going to produce you income, it's okay to max it out. It's okay to max mm-hmm. out your credit card.
Mm-hmm.
If you're okay. so scared to go above a certain percentage because you were told by who knows who, you're never going to buy the laptop and you're never going mm. to, you know, get to the goals that you want to reach.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with buying a course. Oh, my credit card is $1,000. And if I buy this $1,000 course, I'll max it out. And that's mm. bad for my credit. Well, guess what? That's bad for your credit, but that's even worse for your future if you don't take the education mm. that you need.
I love that. And I think if you're even struggling with like, is this a good invest? Just reach out to Brian and ask and be like, what do you think? Right. And because sometimes, again, I think the action steps that people can take, read the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, like maybe re-listen to this episode, you know, like listen to it, like talk to people about credit. And also, of course, reach out to Brian and like introduce yourself, maybe hop on a Zoom call and see what options are there for you. So mm-hmm. So that whether that's like building your credit, just you got to take action and, you know, you have to start somewhere. Doesn't matter. Like we've all been there where we've all had started from zero credit and, you know, you can build it in different ways. So,
yeah,
you got this.
And I do want to give a warning, though.
mm-hmm.
I'm actually very aggressive with my clients.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. So it's because my job isn't to make them happy or comfortable. It's
oh, to God. Make
or, you know, or to validate. Am I doing this okay? My job is to help them reach success
yeah.
or new levels of success. And as you, I've even heard some of your podcasts, mm-hmm. you know, get comfortable with being yeah. uncomfortable. And people sometimes you said that to for themselves, that's for them to coach themselves, right?
Yeah.
But when it's someone else, mm-hmm. it's kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that's, and especially with credit.
Yeah. Which I kind of see on your end. It's like, you kind of have to push people like uh-huh. to get out of, and it's money, it's risk. And it's, so it can be like very hard on people, but at the same time, you have to get past that fear and know that you have guidance. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like the best thing, you know? So just, you kind of like, you're not going to go and get like, go push those limits if you don't try. Right.
Yes. It's, and that's my job. It's to pressure people to be the best possible version of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's to help shift their perspective in a meaningful way. Right. I'm also respectful. So even though I say I'm aggressive, yeah. it's because I push and push and push. Like, you got to try it. You got to take the lift. I believe in you, mm-hmm. right? If I believe in you, why can't you believe in yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just because I want to serve you. Mm-hmm. And I know that you're capable of a lot. So yeah. that's what it's kind of like to work with me. It's where I really, you know, I champion my clients.
I love that. Well, thank you for being honest. And So the next thing I want to know is how can, okay, so this is the part where what is like the good debt and what is bad debt, and kind of getting like, first you can talk about either you want to talk about bad debt first or good debt first, but explain the difference.
Yes. Yeah, so we'll start with bad debt. Bad debt is obviously, let's just say this, we're just going to keep it simple. You have a credit card and you take on bad debt when you swipe your credit card towards bills that you can't keep up with. That's a big one. Unfortunately, there's a lot of Americans out there that do this. You know, they can't make ends meet and they'll put it on a credit card. That's the worst thing you can do. It would have been better to just not even pay the bill, not even with the credit card, because you'll keep the service on, right? But unfortunately, now you'll start to incur interest. And the biggest upsetting factor in this is that if you really can't keep up with the bills.
Yeah. So
this is more, this isn't even a credit problem. This is more of a financial problem.
Yeah.
But like I said, actually there's people out there who do this. You know, not only do they live paycheck to paycheck, and that's pretty dangerous on itself, because you know, if you miss a day or two of work, your paycheck is in full and you can't complete all your bills. Some people add on living paycheck to paycheck and they cover some bills with a credit card. So that's bad debt. And again, that's not really a credit problem. That's more of a actual financial income problem. So if you're in that situation, I would really advise to do something about, you know, trying to make more money or something else, but don't put it on credit cards.
Yeah. Okay. And how many, I mean, credit cards would you recommend people to have? What's your like number? Or I know you have like a bunch, but
so like, a good amount of credit cards would be 5 to 7.
Okay.
Most people have 1, 2, or 3.
Yeah.
And sometimes one of those are retail cards.
Because
they got persuaded at the store to open up a credit card with that store. That's not really recommended at all. Doesn't help you really build credit or take advantages of the benefits of credit cards.
Yeah.
That would even come into play with bad debt. When you open up a credit card with a store, you are more inclined to use it at that store. And, you know, stores don't really sell assets. They sell liabilities like clothes, electronics, you know, TVs. So that is bad debt, where I understand you want to get that, you know, now they're 8K TVs.
Yeah.
And they cost like $2,000 or $3,000.
Oh, wow.
And people will put it on a credit card because they want to have the latest and greatest TV.
Wow.
So that's bad debt. That's a liability.
Anything. And I just want to say, like, it are bad, and I know you're giving examples, which, you know, there are very clear examples, but it just also depends on how you use it. Like you said, like electronics, like let's say you wanted to get your like laptop, or let's say like there's, again, like it just depends. Or let's say you do want to buy clothes, but it's for like a job interview, right? And you want to, I mean,
you're correct. You're more correct. We kind of want to obviously point it out.
Yeah. It's not priority. One. It's not like your
What's funny is almost anything can actually be an asset. Just like that's how you said clothes can be an asset. But it just really comes down to the person's habits and mindset. I think that's a big one. It's going to be mindset. So just like how you said, I'm buying these clothes for work. Well, that's great. That's awesome. You know, self-confidence is priceless. Just don't buy a whole wardrobe if you know it's not going to produce income.
Being disciplined. Exactly. Like how you said, like once you do have the card, you want to use it, right? So at that store that you go to, right? So be careful with those Target credit cards, Marshall. Macy's. I don't know. Macy's. Oh my gosh, Macy's is a big one.
They got me there. I will say that.
Target got me because I'm always at Target. So I'm like, just in case of an emergency.
Right? You convince yourself. That's what ends up happening.
They're little it just makes 5%, sense. Say 5%. No, hombre. That's crazy.
Well, actually, and to top that off, exactly mm-hmm. what we're talking about in debt, in the bad debt category, is over leveraging when the asset, just like how we were talking about, mm-hmm. over leveraging when the asset you are purchasing will not cash flow right away.
Okay. So
that's like... like the laptop, right? Even mm-hmm. the laptop, it's mm-hmm. an asset. It's for work. But if your work isn't producing the income to pay back yeah. the laptop, now you might start to incur some interest. And yeah. You have to be diligent about how you purchase things.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Like sometimes, and I get it. Like as entrepreneurs, like we're very like risk-taking. And I'm not saying I've never, like for me, this ain't about me and my credit history, but I'm just saying like
it happens.
It happens. And I think it's just being smart about it. And like then if you do, you know, I mean, and don't be ashamed. I think a lot of times it can be very embarrassing and shameful, like having bad credit, right? Like, especially if you're trying to apply to something and you just can't get it or you know, I mean, and I'll open up, like I used to have really bad credit or I was struggling. Like I had, quit my job and I was like trying to build my business and, you know, it was like some months were good. Some months were like, it was so stressful because I didn't know, like it wasn't consistent. I was still organizing like my systems, my packages and everything for my clients. And it was hard. I couldn't keep up with my bills. It affected my credit bad and it sucked. And then when I did want to get something or invest in something, like I couldn't, you know, even though I was like already okay, it was going to take a longer time to fix it. And so the steps that I did, and this was like before I met you, but I did work with like a credit company that allowed me to like, you know, write letters and like take out some of those reports and things like that. Now that my history was like getting better. So it is possible to lift, like to build it, but it's just, if I can encourage you, like just keep up with it because yeah. it's a pain in the ass to pick it back up.
Yes. To clean it up. It's a pain. It costs money and it takes time. And like you said, it's stressful because again, the moment you want it or you need it,
yeah,
it's and not.
I know. There. And I was like, how could I be in this position? Like, I was just so mad at myself because I was like, I'm smarter than this. Like, I should know better than this. But you know what? Sometimes, like, okay, it's like, I'd rather be. Sometimes I'm like, okay, I can solve it. It's not like I'm in owing like millions of dollars, you know. It's like a lesson that I'm like, it's like a couple thousand dollar lessons, but not millions. So now yeah. it's just like learning, taking it one day at a time and really being smart with your finances and cutting back on shit you don't need, to be honest. Yeah,
correct. Yeah, no, yeah, that's what it mm-hmm. is. And then talking about good debt, so trying mm-hmm. to, you know, pick it back up on a positive yeah. note, even though that was your experience, you know, the fact that you went through that mm-hmm. Shows people. The good thing is you're sharing that it's, you can repair it.
Yes.
So yeah, and that is something definitely that is out there mm-hmm. and it works, you know, repairing your credit does work.
Mm-hmm.
So some steps or investments that you can do with your credit card are things that people wouldn't necessarily think it's good debt. But again, let's just put it out there. It's good debt. Stuff like starting a side hustle,
mm-hmm.
right? There's so many. I can't even think of them because there's so many. So that's the thing. A lot of people don't want to start a side business or start something because they say, I don't have any money. That's an excuse because use your credit card. And why do we start a side business, right? Why do we start a side hustle? It's to make money. So what's wrong with using your credit card? If the purpose of where you're going to, you know, use it for is to make money.
Yeah.
So there you go. It'll pay for itself. Getting educated is a big one. It's like the biggest one.
Yeah. And we're not talking about college.
No. And there you go. It used to be.
Shout out to all my estudiosas and educated, college educated people. But yeah, I mean, that is the most craziest like debt you can ever get. But yeah.
But you got it on credit.
Yep.
And people don't understand that or a loan, you know,
that was credit. Like, yeah. When I was in college, and I don't know if you know this, but I only went to college for 2 years, and I was like, I knew I always wanted to like have my own business, or I started like, this is like Instagram and all of this blogging and like just influencer / I don't know, all of these things were picking up, and I was like, there's like marketing is where it's at. And then I ended up dropping out after my second year. I went to UC Santa Cruz and I left. I was like, I don't want to work for somebody or a company or everything that was the major there. I was like, I don't want to do it. In the long run, right? I do believe in like getting a job to provide for your business and like, you know, other your future goals. But I did end up dropping out because I was like, I'm just spending so much money on school that I'm going to have to owe, which I still owe a little bit. But I'm almost, but it's nothing compared to like that hundreds and thousands of dollars that people after
leaving. Yeah, it's a crazy range that it can be at, right? In college, it's
ridiculous. Yeah,
yeah. I'm glad I didn't go to college, so I saved myself there.
Yeah,
because even what I'm doing right now, it doesn't require no sort of degree.
Is college, and honestly, I've gotten a lot of great opportunity, like in the past, like work opportunities that pay very well, and they legit do not ask for my college. But I will say, because you mentioned education, I invested in courses, but they're not, you know, hundreds of thousands. It's like $1,000. And people, it's crazy how people are like $1,000. Those same people who spend like $100,000 or $50,000 a year on college, like for them to think like, oh my gosh, a course that's like $1,000, which is, you know, it's a good investment, but it's like nothing. I'm like, it's going to make you, you know, it just depends how you implement it. So all about education.
Exactly. So giving a little bit more details about that is, like you said, courses. So courses, if you want a good course, it can range anywhere between $200 to $2,000. And like you said, people's perspective is $1,000. Nope. $2,000, even less. But they will gladly spend, you know, $10,000 for a semester. So not only is that 10 times the investment, but that is so much time.
Yeah,
because they have to show up to class. They're willingly having to do homework. And the best thing about these courses nowadays that are becoming more common now is that they're very specific. So that's why, and you get it from someone.
Yeah,
hopefully, you know, you should.
That someone's already who's doing it.
Versus exactly.
You colleges are very general, right?
And in general, because they have to kind of teach everybody, and not everybody's interest is going to align. But in courses, the creator who created the course, he could be all about, let's just, one of the biggest niche is like Amazon, e-commerce, and specifically Amazon, there you go. You can learn all about it. So that's courses. Another one is, this is stepping it up, but if you want to increase and get a big return, is mentorships.
Mm-hmm.
Mentorships, I've seen them on the low end from $2,000 and to the high end of $100,000.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But this is definitely the new college, is mentorships.
Yeah. Like I hired my first big invest. Okay. My first course was like $1,000 and it was to do learn about email marketing, blogging, like newsletters. And then that's what my service, I learned that. And then I offered that as a service, and it's so necessary, and it's made me way more than $1,000. My second investment mentorship was, and this one was a little like, for me, barely coming out of college, not really making a lot, but I did put it on a credit card, was my coach $5,000 for a 6-month one-on-one coaching. But she taught me like kind of the systems and just even the networking, right? She would introduce me to better paying clients, and it ended up working out, and that connection. So I think, and I know I'm crazy, like people are like, what the heck, Raina? But I'm just crazy.
Mm-hmm. No, nowadays, that's one of the biggest gold mines on an investment that you can make.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to, for example, a direct correlation that people think investing is in the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, go put $1,000 on the S&P 500. And hopefully you'll be happy if you get a 10% return in a year. Or, you know, you can put in that same money, like you said, with the mentor. Mm-hmm. And like you said, now you got exposed to higher paying clients.
Mm-hmm.
Right there, the money just doubled. You got your money back.
Mm-hmm.
One more client at the same $5,000 sale,
mm-hmm.
you just got 100% return
mm-hmm.
on your money. And the skill is priceless because you have it.
Yeah, I love that. So that's all good debt, right? So
exactly. That's okay. All good debt, because you are your biggest asset.
Mm-hmm.
So why wouldn't you invest in yourself? Invest in yourself.
Yeah.
And
even like books and just and events, going to conferences, going. That was another thing that I invested in, was going to a lot of events too.
Yeah. So I'll give an example myself. I'm going to an event in Arizona in April. The ticket is $500.
Mm-hmm.
The whole travel, I think it's going to be like $1,000. So all in, it's $1,500, like you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
But I only need to learn one thing that's super valuable
mm-hmm.
that I can implement, and I'll make my money back. And then I'll take that again with my in the future. And that is something kind of like what Robert Kiyosaki talks about, an infinite return. So it just pays back. And this isn't even in dividends. Dividends would be a fraction of, you know, of what you put in. This is the full capital that you invested. It just keeps on returning.
Mm-hmm. The mindset shift. And also like when you do, and again, like when you're, let's say, you know, you're going to go to this event and everyone obviously invested $500. Like, they're serious about their business. They're people that, you know, are at a certain level in their business if they're willing to pay that amount. And a lot of the times when I go to these events, yes, it's kind of like, damn, I got to put down $500. But normally, and I mean, I'm there to learn and network, but usually I get 2-3 clients from there. And I high paying clients, because my service isn't cheap, and my paid social media ads. And so those are the type of people, you know, you want to connect with, like, when it comes to business and everything, versus going to like free events, which of course go to all of them, but I'm just saying, you will notice the difference from a paid event and then from a free event.
Exactly. Even with the mentorship, you only get so far with the free content that people put out there. But when you actually pay to be one-on-one or even in a group setting, the information is just so much different.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always say there's two currencies, like time and money, right? And time, they're both very, they're both valuable, but it gets to a point where your time is more and you're willing to pay money for your time, right? Like, let's say if someone gave you the step-by-step guide to, you know, creating your e-commerce business, that's good versus you going on YouTube and, like, you know, there's YouTube University, you can totally learn, but it's just going to take you a lot more time and research and just depending. And in the beginning, that's what I did. But then eventually I was like, okay, I'm going to make the investment. So, oh my God, we can talk about this forever.
Yeah.
But I definitely want to go forward with, like, how can you leverage credit?
Yes. So credit is leverage. That's the, okay. So that's the amazing thing, that credit itself is leverage.
Mm-hmm.
It's money, capital, funding that you wouldn't necessarily have, you know, to do big things.
Yeah. Yeah. So, then that's kind of what we've been talking about, like, kind of using it as a tool, right? So being smart with it and everything. And what about the best 3 tips to build credit? So let's say if someone's like 400, 300. I don't even know if you can go that low, but
so building credit, we'll start off with actually acquiring credit. So
okay.
At 18 years old, you can now get a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the biggest tip, is to start as early as possible.
And I do know also, and I want you to touch on it, that I believe that you can open up, or you can have a, like, if you have a little child and they're born, you can make them a joint partner or something, or a joint account. And so they're building, like, they're connected to your credit. So by the time they're 18, they'll have some type of credit history already.
Correct. That's for parents.
Yes.
Right. If you have a kid and a teenager, most likely above 14 okay. would be very, very early. So 15, 16, 17, mm-hmm. especially 17 or 16, mm-hmm. you do want to add them as an authorized user. Yes. To mm-hmm. one of your credit cards. And mm-hmm. that will build them, first of all, their credit report. So it'll start to exist.
Yeah.
So just like I said, if you don't ever have that, you want to start early and just apply to a credit card company mm-hmm. that has very low qualifications, are beginner friendly. So don't go for Chase. Don't go to Wells Fargo, because unfortunately you will get denied,
because okay.
they're going to say you don't have any credit history.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to scratch your head and say, well, how do I obtain credit history if I can't get a credit card? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't get credit.
Yeah.
So I definitely recommend Capital One.
Okay.
So it can be either Capital One or Discover. They are very, very beginner friendly.
Okay.
You want to try to get approved for an unsecured credit card.
Mm-hmm.
Unsecured means you never put any money yourself, because the other option is a secured credit card. Okay. A secured credit card is you funded yourself. You gave the bank $100, $200, $500 of your own money. Mm-hmm. And then that's the money that you borrow. So you're essentially borrowing against your own money.
Mm.
It's a great way to start off. It's okay. But you really do want to get an unsecured credit card, mm-hmm. because that does go on your credit card report. And now when you want to get a better credit card with a better bank, mm-hmm. again, like Chase, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, if they see that you've only had a secured credit card, they are still not going to want to, you know, accept you, unfortunately.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So it's a really, it's a big hassle in the early stages of your credit game.
Mm-hmm.
But you just want to get past through that, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And if
or
you
what
don't
about
get
like credit uh-huh. unions, they're so good too, right? For beginner friendly.
only if you can get in one, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because credit unions are for members, and depending on the credit union itself, they have rules on how you can become a member.
Yeah. I used to work at a first school. So that's how I got, I have schools first. So that's how I got in. But if you can get into a credit union, like, and basically if I think I can even get somebody or a family member or something like that, like I have some type of like referral. Just know, like, learn from somebody who, or figure out who has a credit union and then see their, how you can get in, because they have very like low interest rates and just like less fees and things like that. So, and they're all very different, everybody. Like, I just think that's another thing. Like, do, just because you go to Chase doesn't mean like that's the only bank. Like, I think that's what a lot of people don't know, is like, there's so many different, it's basically like a business, a different requirements and things like that. So don't get discouraged when you get denied or people say no.
That is correct. Only I do talk a lot about the big banks, because that's where you'll really get all the great benefits.
Okay.
Like 0%, like you're saying union banks, credit unions, they're great. But unfortunately, they don't offer points, cash back.
Yes.
They don't offer sign-up bonuses. They don't offer 0% interest.
Okay.
The interest, it is low, but it still can be 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12%. And now that depends on your score.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, it's a great way to open up an account, a credit card. We were talking about a parent doing it for a child. But actually it doesn't even have to be a parent. So I do want to add that up and clear that up, that it could be a friend. If you're 18 years old, if you're 19 years old and you have a friend, you know, that he's 24, 25 or older, or it doesn't matter their age, but as long as they have good credit, you know, try to make sure they have good credit.
Yeah.
And then you can ask, can you add me as an authorized user, just to help me build up my credit report. So then I can apply and get approved by myself. And then that's a great way to get started too.
Okay.
So that's the biggest one. It's just to start early.
Yeah. And then building credit. So what about if people who already, who, you know, they got it, they made some financial mistakes, or, you know, but they're ready to build it up. Like, what are some, and I know there's not really, I don't know if there's like a magic, I mean, I wish, but it really does take time. But what are some ways to like expedite that process?
So the best way, if you get into some trouble, what you're going to want to do is unfortunately contact like a credit repair service.
Yeah.
The problem with credit repair services is that the business is all about having a customer in their system for the longest time. So you're going to want to look for a very reputable business.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, most, like I said, they're going to work slow. It is all letters. It's a lot of mumbo jumbo that they're going to probably throw at you.
It's like they move the needle forward, but literally like 1 month at a time. It's like a subscription.
Exactly.
And they do, obviously they have to improve, because if not, like, people are not going to see the results and then they're not going to want to continue. But I know it. Yeah. Like when I worked with the credit repair, it was a very slow, it took, you know, but you know what? It's like the sooner you start, the better. And you know, it can improve. So
you want to avoid getting into a situation where your credit is declining because of bad financial decisions. So it's just all a matter of be smart about it and don't get behind, because it is going to cost you if you start to decline, if you start to have late payments. Worst thing that you can do is when you don't pay back a lender, they'll throw you into collections, and then it becomes predatory, because you'll have collection agencies trying to get paid back. That's a whole another world. We're not even talking about credit anymore. No. This is just, unfortunately, a spiral downwards.
Yeah.
And the only way to get out of it is to pay for help. I do help with that, but it's not my favorite thing to do, right?
Yeah.
But again, it is worth the investment to get it fixed.
Yeah. Like just taking a step forward and before it gets like, and obviously, you know, accept what the decisions you made, like, and get started, you know, and if that means like getting an extra side hustle for temporary and just literally like focusing on paying down that debt and paying down getting back on your feet, right? Because if not, it's gonna be bad. So okay, so that's a good one.
Yes, and like you were saying, there is no magic pill or anything, unfortunately. Or maybe you could think of the magic pill, $1,000, because any company for $1,000, if you negotiate with them, they'll fix everything on your report.
Wow, really?
At most.
Okay.
Whatever they can.
Okay. For $1,000, which you don't have, because if you're at that point, you don't have money to pay. So it's kind of like, I know what you mean.
And the reason why I say $1,000 is because like how we're talking, they're slow. So they're trying to collect as much as they can out of you, from the initial consultation fee, if they have one, to their monthly retainer. Yeah. So if you say, you know, I have $1,000 and I want this, and this, they will move now.
Okay, that makes sense. Which it's like, you're kind of gonna pay the same thing.
Yeah, it's either you're gonna pay just, you know, throughout many periods of a long process or an expedient process where you're gonna be their top customer.
Exactly, that's true.
So, and then the last tip that I can give is more credit cards is actually a stronger foundation for your credit profile. So just how we were talking about, most people tend to have 1, 2, or 3. I strongly recommend anywhere between 5 to 7. And I myself have like 15.
That's crazy.
I'm going to go for more, but just because I play the game to make money off credit cards.
Yeah. Which we're going to go into in a little bit. But of course, like, this is once you have like a very healthy, stable, like, mindset on your money and your finances, and then you can
accelerate the process. Yeah,
I know people who, I mean, I'm sure you probably do, like, they don't pay with their debit card. It's all credit, because of points, but they know how to manage like their money. So it's really powerful, like what you can do with credit. And then those people, they're like, oh, I love credit, you know, like, because it's really cool. But it's crazy how a lot of the time, like, banks get you like this because they know that people don't manage their money correctly, right? Or they try to, it's like keeping up with the Joneses, right? Like trying to be all, I don't know, with the latest technology, latest things, material things that really, you know, don't matter or hurt you financially. I just want people to understand, you have to see, like, again, like, the banks and these lenders as a friend, a loyalty. Like, it's just building that. Like, imagine you, again, like, letting your friend borrow that money and they don't pay you back. And then they eventually pay you back. You kind of lost that trust, you know, and that's what these banks are. Like, you don't want to lose that trust. But in order to build that trust, you need to, like, you know, take that risk, make that negotiation and be like, okay, yes, I'm going to pay you back and I'm going to do it. And then they're like, okay, then they're going to lend you more. Like, hey, I paid you back. I said I was going to do this. And now I'm asking for this much. Okay. It's just going to be like easier and easier. And then you can request for more loans. Right. So I just want people to understand that type of relationship when it comes to, that's what's helped me, right? Especially for the people who don't want to use their credit benefits or like anything, even though they have like good credit. So yeah. What about some credit hacks?
Okay. There are actually sequences where you can apply to multiple banks within a like one day, where you can get anywhere between on the low end, 2 cards all the way to 10 credit cards in one day. So these are sequences where you kind of align, I'm going to apply to this bank, this bank, this bank for this credit card, this credit card, this credit card, going from most likely to get approved to the least likely. So then you run all the inquiries in one day. And then on your report, it only counts as one or two at most when you're applying to like 10.
Okay.
So this way you get multiple credit cards and you can get larger credit limits because you combine them. If you got approved for 5 of them and on each card you got approved for, let's say, $3,000, you just pulled $15,000.
Okay.
In credit.
Oh, wow. That's
so awesome. That's something called like a sequence.
Yeah.
Don't try it out if you don't know what you're doing.
No, I know. And I was going to say, I was like, this is where you like reach out to Brian and an expert that can either walk you through it or teach you first. Like, and again, it's like a education so that you can use this in the future for business or assets.
Yes. And the way that I go about it with my clients is just like how you said it. We work together. I review their credit report and then see where they are. And I assess how much they can actually pull in a day without affecting them and giving them the best approval odds. So everybody's credit is unique to them. So that's how you get the best results is when, like you said, someone who has more experience understands, okay, if you do these banks in a row, you'll get approved. And I can basically guarantee it. And if you get denied, then that's the stop, or we can jump over to this other bank. And if you get approved there, there you go. We got you 15, 20K in one day.
What are some, what's like the best, I feel like there's so many different, like get your free credit report, but what's like the best and most accurate one?
So I use Identity IQ.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because it is a paid report and it's only like $1 for a free trial, for a 7-day trial. And they pull your credit report directly from the bureaus. All three of them. This isn't Credit Karma. This isn't a FICO simulator on any app that you might have that on your bank. A lot of apps now, you know, simulate a score. The problem with that is they try to guess because they don't directly pull a report. They just can kind of see where you are. Due to their algorithms, which, as you know, algorithms are really, really good.
Yeah.
But if you want the exact score, you got to pull it directly from the bureaus.
Yeah.
And Identity IQ does that.
Okay. And another thing that I know people are scared of is like, they never want to pull their report, right? I understand, like, because every time you do pull a report, you, why is that? Why do points go down?
When you pull your report, it doesn't. Like if I go to Identity IQ.com and I ask for it, it doesn't affect my credit score.
I think we're only allowed a year, no?
Or no, no. It affects your score when a lender pulls it. But when you pull it yourself, that doesn't affect your score.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Then that makes the clarification because I know, which makes sense, which usually when you're trying to apply it to stuff like, it's with the lender. So you just want to keep in mind. And that's why it's good to have like higher credit so that every time they do report, like pull that report, you know, it doesn't dock you too much. So What about how do you use credit to build wealth, business and investments? I think this is going to be one of my favorite questions.
So this is going to be a big one. And I actually, let you know,
let's try this is probably like a whole other episode, but
yeah, we'll try to cover as much as we can. Mm-hmm. So we'll actually start with another credit hack that plays mm-hmm. into this. Mm-hmm. So another credit hack is credit card rewards users with points. So mm-hmm. you kind of hit on, talked about this a bit earlier. Mm-hmm. And points are money. A lot mm-hmm. of people don't know that. Again, mm-hmm. first of all, the taboo of credit card bad.
Yeah.
But credit cards give points. Points are incentives, so people keep using their credit card.
Yeah.
This is actually the realest passive income opportunity out there, if you really think about it.
That's true.
So if you put if you put some thought into it, this is the only passive income that you can actually get. No BS, where you don't have to invest, quote unquote, invest anything, right? It's like you're not buying a stock that has to pay dividends and there you go, passive income. Literally, you just use your credit card and you're getting rewarded points. Mm-hmm. I had this, someone asked me, well, why would I care about points? Doesn't really look significant. Mm-hmm. I have to accumulate so many, you know, in order for it to be worth it.
Yeah.
I'd rather use my debit card and not risk getting into debt. Mm-hmm. Well, my response was, I don't accumulate points as pennies. I accumulate points as dollars. Mm-hmm. Because I actually, you know, my lifestyle, it's a regular lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And on its own, I accumulate anywhere between $300 to $500 monthly now.
Oh, nice.
Just on points.
Which is like, okay, everyone, if you think about it, that's passive, which is 300, 500. Like, that's maybe you can use that in other ways that can build you more wealth. And then you accumulate more points and more points. And you know what? I think the first time, I think I heard about that, which is so crazy. And this is why, you know, wealth and all of this is so important and like learning this. But I remember I heard that and I called my bank and I was like, how many points? I had a credit card and I was like, how many points do I have? And I had like $600 worth of points that I didn't even know. And I just like, I was like, oh, I paid off the card and I had extra money, you know? And I'm like, I didn't even know that. And I was like, oh my God, I think that was like the first time I realized like the power of credit card and points, and right? So that's really cool.
It's dollars that just add.
Yeah,
add
and let's say yeah, month. And let's say a lot of people use it for like gas or money, mm-hmm. or I mean money, food, like things that are not too big, you know. Like
you have to buy those, mm-hmm. and your paycheck has to cover it, so yes. Might as well just, you know, do a little side transaction, your credit card, and immediately pay it off. That's fine. But at least you captured some points.
I love that.
So that is part of, you know, that's extra money, passive income that you didn't have. And then you can use that, like we said, to purchase investments, purchase stocks, mm-hmm. or buy a course that you thought you couldn't afford mm-hmm. before. You found yourself with $600. Mm-hmm. Imagine it was at the moment where you needed it to go to a seminar. Boom, there you go.
That's so true. I love that.
I do also want to put a note out there that the format that I'm able to accumulate so many points is because I have 15 credit cards. Mm-hmm. And some credit cards are best used in specific categories to maximize point reward, mm-hmm. Reward points.
Okay.
So that's once you really get into it, you start to understand, I got to use, you know, my Amex card mm-hmm. for my advertising in my business. Yeah. I have to use my Wells Fargo 2% cashback unlimited on my food, my Chase Sapphire for my restaurant dining if I go out.
What's like, I would like to know what's been the most, like one of the best experiences or returns from a credit card. Like, share a story.
Well, this vacation.
This vacation. Uh-huh.
Yeah, right now where we're at, our hotel. Our stay in Vegas the whole week paid on a credit card. The craziest thing that I've done has been I purchased my first NFT last week.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And I made mistakes, right? I should have got some help, but I did it by myself. And the crypto world is really crazy. A lot of volatility. So I used my points to just navigate me through that. So if I lost any money, it didn't hurt, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't like my job and my paycheck and then me putting it into the market. So the way NFT works is you have to buy crypto. You have to convert it into a specific coin, then go to a specific marketplace that sells NFTs. Every time you do a transaction, converting crypto into another crypto, there's a fee. Every time you change, you send crypto from an exchange, that's where you buy it to your wallet. Sending it to yourself, you have to pay a fee.
Oh, wow.
And then finally, for me to buy the actual NFT that I wanted to purchase, only just to purchase it was like $130 in a transaction fee.
Wow.
So there were so many fees.
Wow.
Just to finally get to my destination of buying the NFT.
Oh my gosh. Well, congrats to you. And if you don't know what like NFTs are, that's another, I mean, that's
it's
like
a whole nother thing, right?
Which I'm like, oh my God, so, get ready.
It's a non-fungible token, NFT. But again, it's something in the crypto space. And I was able to luckily just redeem $1,000 from my Amex points. And like I said, it didn't hurt to pay fee after fee after fee to finally get a picture of a monkey.
I know, which is awesome because it's like, it's, you know, it's, you never know. Like,
yeah, I don't know.
And it's like, that's with a lot of these investments, you know, it's, they're not, I mean, depends like what investment, but like something like this that can, you know, the money that, like you said, it doesn't hurt. That's what I like that you mentioned. Like, it's something that you can invest. And you always kind of want to be taking these like risks, you know, so just for people out there. And this is one of the benefits of like building your credit, having credit cards and all of that. But I want you to share a little bit about like how people can work with you. Let's say they sign up like, and you don't, I mean, just kind of like a little summary of like what that entails.
Yes. So, to connect with me, the best place is Instagram. My Instagram handle is OPM Wizard.
Yes. So, and we'll include it in the show notes, but
thank you. Well, it's OPM, other people's money wizard, just because I wanted to stand out. Right. And over there on Instagram, I post all my, client success, clients results, all our wins. My job is to really get them high credit limits. But I work with everybody, beginners, intermediate, advanced people. And especially for people starting out, it's really important because if you make a couple of mistakes, unfortunately the cost isn't just, you know, money that you're missing out on. It's time that you're going to lose, because unfortunately, if you apply and get denied and you don't know what you're doing and you apply again and you get denied, that gets put on your report, your credit report, makes it difficult yet again to apply. And the only way to clear that up is a time factor. And the time factor can be anywhere between 6 to 12 months where you should not apply. And so you're literally halted.
Yeah.
But you can't take advantage of all these opportunities of points, of great credit cards with great banks, right? So that's why it's really important to do credit correctly. And then what was the other part of the question?
Well, how can you just like, what was the, if they were to work with you, like, what's the process like? Going details, like, is it like weekly calls? Do they, like, is it a course, consultation, like things like that?
So I developed a mentorship program and it's one-on-one. Cause like I said, it's unique. And I'm pretty sure no one wants to share their, you know, credit history with other people if we were to do it in a group setting. So these are all private Zoom calls with me and you. It's like a course, but it's not a course because
like you have a process.
Exactly. Right? It's a very systematic format where it's designed to make you win. So like today we were talking a lot about credit. In there, I go super specific, super detailed in giving you all the knowledge from understanding credit reports, credit algorithms, right? How to game the system when applying. The importance of your credit score and how it's just a number. You know, that's a big mindset set shift that I have to put into people.
Right? Because I said, like, it can really F you up. Like when you're like, damn, I'm like, you just, I don't know. That's how I felt.
And then the meat of the mentorship is really about credit cards. People love that. Once they get into the world, there's hundreds of credit cards out there. And it's all about knowing which ones are actually perfect for you to maximize welcome bonuses, points. You know, you can really obtain thousands of dollars just from points. And then I don't leave you there. The way I help my clients win is because, and part of the mentorship is I guide you through investing, business opportunities. If you already have some specific interests, I've done kind of all of them. E-commerce. I've done a lot of side hustles and all that. So I know the ins and outs of many industries. And so I can guide you through those. My specialty is also marketing. And so I can help people, even if they have a unique business or they believe they have a unique business, because any business really needs stellar marketing.
Yeah. And I know I wanted to also ask, because you touched on it, what is the difference between personal credit and business credit? And just so, because we have a lot of like entrepreneurs or up and coming entrepreneurs who maybe didn't know that there was, I didn't know before, like that there is actual business credit and you can like, and so let's just educate our people. So please share.
So I'm glad that you brought that up because so what I do is mainly personal credit. I do also have mentorship for business credit. But most people, we all start off with personal.
Yeah.
Because if you want to get the best leverage in business, your personal credit has to be outstanding, stellar.
Okay.
This is where you have almost $100,000 in credit lines in your personal.
Dang.
Now imagine how much leverage you will have in your business.
Yeah.
If you start, you know, if you get up to $10,000 credit limit in your personal, and then you're all about building your business credit, you're not going to get, you know, crazy lines on business. They'll probably match you. They'll give you a $5,000 credit limit on a business card.
Wow.
When that should not be the case. A business credit card should really be minimum 25, right? Average 30, 40, 50K on a single card for business.
Wow.
But now talking about the specifics on the difference of personal and business. Business credit is like the level two on the credit world, right? This is where you're building credit for the business itself. You should not ever apply for business credit under your social. It should really be under the tax identification number for the business itself. Now you're not going to have a FICO score. You're going to have a Dun & Bradstreet number. It ranges from 1 to 100. And again, it's a whole another game. It would be a whole another episode, right?
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of like brush, like for sure mention that that's like level two and we will all get there, but we first need to, you know, make sure like your money management is on point, and you know, then you can start using these tools. And you know, this episode is to introduce you to Brian and to introduce you to the credit world, and you know, and then you can reach out to Brian and for his services or ask very specific questions.
So for your audience, that'll be the best if they have any specific questions, again, because it's all unique to everyone.
Yeah.
Definitely just reach out to me on Instagram. Mm-hmm. If you want to send me a message, no problem. Yes. It's better if we can get on a Zoom call, because then you'll give me all the details. Right. Yeah. And that's the best way for me even to assess and give you a proper response point you in the right direction.
Okay, sounds good. Yay. Well, thank you so much, Brian, for being part of the interview. I'm sure many of us learned a lot. I learned a couple of things just today. So I really want to encourage everyone listening to reach out to Brian, like follow him. He's always sharing tips on credit. And I just think that's so beautiful and powerful. And then, I don't know, just another Latino, another, you know, dreamer who is making stuff happen. So Everyone needs to be building credit. Everyone, like, it's just super important. I feel the sooner you can get educated, the better. So y'all, he's 24 years old, like vacationing, like full brain with this point. So, you know, you're very, and as you can all tell, like you're very knowledgeable and you're like, you have so much more growth, right? And I'm like, I'm so excited to where the future is going to take you. So thank you so much.
No, and thank you for having me. This was my pleasure.